It's the end of the line, folks. We're done. We're coming. We're about to cross the finish line. We've went through. We're done running our 10-kilometer marathon. We're about to cross the finish line and, you know, have a sip of Gatorade or just plain old water. Mr. Warren Hayes, this is the end of the G132 Climax coverage here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show channel, whether you're watching on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, which by the way, if you are, consider subscribing, you know, as a last minute token, nice gesture. As I thank you, Warren, for walking us through this entire tournament. And it's my pleasure, really, because I love tournament wrestling. This is just, yeah. I hope I was able to bring in some kind of value to it for you guys and gals and non-binary pals. So consider a subscription. And, you know, the coverage might be over, but you'll still get notified as to when the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper records and uploads and all the other sundry nonsense that I do here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show channel. It's all wrestling related. Don't worry. I don't go off on a tangent and start reviewing, you know, episodes of, you know, My Little Pony. Do people still do that? I think that's a bit of a dated meme right there. Shows my age. But nonetheless, we are drawing to an end. And if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast application, it's the same thing. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it a great deal. Maybe a 5-star review to cap this all off on Apple Podcasts would be nice. Maybe a 5-star rating on Spotify. Any way you can show some love. They're very, very, very simple ways to show support to any content creator. And it doesn't just work like that for me. I'm not special. It works this way for everyone. So, you know, whether it's me or another content creator that you particularly like, you know, they will absolutely appreciate a little support that way. Just like I'm pretty sure New Japan appreciated the support they got in anyone who was doing coverage during the G1 this year. You know, I really do think that TV Asahi's very virulent desire to DMCA anything New Japan related on the internet, you know, even GIFs, I think it does stymie some of the coverage and the excitement that people might have towards the G1. Because there's things sometimes you're like, this would be a great gift, or I'd like to be able to share it, but I also kind of don't want my channel to be struck down. I don't really feel like having a copyright strike. I'm in good standing. You know, I have access to all the features. Nothing's being taken away from me. I'm not interested in that. But I also think it does, like, in a common way, you know, for most people out there who are hardcores and who enjoy wrestling and who hang out on Twitter and, you know, not being able to share the GIFs, the images, the pictures, it's a bit of a bummer. And I think it does hamper coverage, and it does hamper people getting excited about it and people going like, oh, maybe I'll check this out. That looked pretty cool. Because there were a lot of good things in this G1. But you know what? This is what we're doing here tonight is wrapping up nights 17 and 18. And when I say the coverage is coming to an end, well, when I said that earlier, this is what I meant specifically, and I went off on a tangent, of course. But I'll be wrapping up the two-night combo coverage that I've been doing. Even though there's still the semifinals and the finals left. Semifinals are tomorrow, the 17th. Finals are on the 18th. It just so happens on the 18th is when I record the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. So I'm going to finish off officially my G1 32 Climax, G1 Climax 32 Climax, G32-1 coverage on Thursday during the recording of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper. So maybe there you go. You have an incentive to listen to the podcast this week. Because I will be taking the time to go over the semifinals, the finals there. I'll be talking about, you know, get a principal overview, you know, of, you know, how I felt about the G1. High, you know, good moments, low moments. People, you know, who I consider to be the MVPs of this tournament. People who've had very good performances. Maybe people who haven't had as great performances, or maybe under-delivered in regards to my expectations. And my top matches as well. You'll also get my recommendations there. I'm pretty sure, if you've been following these, I'm pretty sure you already know at least two or three of them. But if you want the whole thing, Mr. Warren Hayshel this Thursday records live here on youtube.com/MrWarrenHayes at 9 p.m. Eastern. Otherwise, we'll be available in audio format and video on demand the next day. But let's go to the matter at hand, which is breaking down the last couple of nights of the G132, which I thought were two pretty good nights of pro wrestling. Overall, I don't think it was, you know, there's a couple of moments where that you know, I could have done without, let's put it that way. But I think the good outweighs the bad. And we're gonna get into it right now. We're getting back to August 14, night 17 from the Nagano White Ring. Yoshihashi defeated David Finlay, officially killing Dave Finlay's possibility for winning the block. Right, I'm gonna break. You know, we're gonna go in chronological order here. I'm not going to like make a mishmash of everything. But at that point, like, well, Dave will not be able to win the block here. Neither will Yoshihashi. Both of these guys, that was their last match of the tournament. So they were really concerned by the seven-way tie, which became a possibility. I thought this match was pretty good. I thought it was a solid match. Yoshihashi is coming in hard early during this match until Finlay drills his shoulder, hits a pescado, and he just works the shoulder over the entirety of the match. Yoshihashi drop kicks David Finlay's knee, hits the headhunter and the neck breaker. They trade strikes. There's two Uranagi backbreakers by Dave Finlay. Goes for the trash panda. It's avoided by Yoshihashi, who hits his rewind kick. Goes for karma. It's reversed into a stunner by Dave Finlay, who goes then for the acid drop and the blue thunder bomb. Yoshihashi hits a thrust kick and a rebound lariat by Finlay. He goes for the acid drop again. It's blocked. Yoshihashi stays on top of him as he rolls up and plops down, just sits on him for the win, taking a page out of his Chaos teammate, Kazuchika Okada. I mean, you know, nothing wrong with this match here. Getting settling the drama for D-Block very, very quickly. You know, it's like, look, you know, basically, you know, Dave Finlay's not winning here, right? we're keeping this seven-way this seven-way tie thing alive. Fun little match. It was all right. Next, we had the Great Okan defeating Tai Chi in B-block action. This match had no incidents whatsoever on anything in the tournament at this point because both Okan and Tai Chi were eliminated. There was a long stalemate at first where they were trying different things like... Basically, Tai Chi was in a sumo stance, trying to get Great Okan to come wrestle him in a sumo mode, whereas Great Okan was on his back. He's like, no, man, come grapple. Eventually, they get into a sumo thing, but there's a great judo throw by Great Okan. Locks in a sheep killer. Black Mephisto attempt happens, but the claw stays applied. It all ends with a snap suplex by Great Okan, who holds the bridge and gets the win. So, you know, an out of the ordinary win, which was a theme throughout this G1. People getting like shock wins using maneuvers that they don't usually use or aren't necessarily perceived as finishers. This was a bit of a running thing throughout the tournament as well. Look, there was nothing to this match, like nothing to it, and there wasn't any gravity to it. I would like to see Tai Chi and Great O'Khan wrestle again in a singles match, especially if they decide to go down this route again, where it's like, let's try and throw each other's wrestling expertises at each other. I'm okay with that. That could be fun. Tom Lawler defeated Jeff Cobb. I'm like, what? But yes, it happened. Lawler early on gets caught up in a sack of shit by Jeff Cobb. And you know, here's what's funny. You know, people who listen to the Mr. Warren Hayes show know that I've started calling the Fallaway Slam the sack of shit after I heard the story, and I think it's Kevin Nash who told the story that after Scott Hall's passing, that Scott Hall called the Fallaway Slam the sack of shit because it was like dumping a sack of shit over your head. And Lance Archer was on commentary for this evening, and he called it straight out the sack of shit. And Kevin Kelly was like, "Oh, that's an interesting way to call it." So that gave me a little affirmation that I'm doing the right thing here by calling it the sack of shit. Rear naked choke by Tom Lawler, and they both go to the floor. There's forearms to Tom Lawler's back by Jeff Cobb. He also hits a flying European uppercut, but Lawler starts going for the leg kicks, attempts an arm bar, transitions into an ankle lock. So we're getting grapple man Tom Lawler in this one. Jeff Cobb lifts his way up and over and tosses Tom Lawler into an overhead belly-to-belly, which was really cool. Lawler, though, hits a uranage, and he goes for a guillotine, but Jeff Cobb reverses it into a superplex. Lawler fights back with some strikes, super kick by Jeff Cobb, open palm by Tom Lawler, and they both fall to the mat. There's a pair of Germans by Jeff Cobb, but Lawler is making him work for every German that he's trying to pull off here. He goes for a first, a second, and the third German, Tom Lawler turns it into an armbar. Then he hits the Kamigoye, a Regalplex, and the NKOTB for the win. This might have been my favorite Tom Lawler match of the tournament. I think this was really interesting and probably the match that I was expecting from him when he wrestled Bad Luck Fale all those eons ago. You remember maybe when I was complaining that, you know, Tom Lawler's a smart guy. He should not just be jumping onto Bad Luck Fale's back and trying to sleeper hold him all the time. He, you know, he's better than that. He should be picking his spots, chopping down at the knees and so on and so on. And that's what he did here. It was good. I enjoyed this. Did I like this more than the Okada match? That's the question. And it's a good question to ask. If I did, it's by a sliver. Because I think the spots were more meaningful in this match. There was a lot more meaningfulness into this match here. And, you know, Jeff Cobb needed this win to attempt to stay relevant in the conversation of the block. But effectively here, Tom Lawler eliminated Cobb from the tournament. And then we had our main event. What a great main event we had here, folks. This is a recommended match from your boy, Mr. Warren Hayes. Kenta defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi. And this match already came in with a story, with stakes, right? Because this was the first match that Kenta and Tana had against each other since the ladder match for the IWGP US title at Wrestle Kingdom, where Kenta's body essentially exploded on him. So Kenta was, you know, probably looking forward to this. Like, this was good. And early on, Kenta, he has a chair. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to fuck around. The referee's like, no, I don't want you to fuck around, actually. So, please give me the chair. He tosses it to Tanahashi, who does some air guitar on it already. So, Tanahashi hits a springboard crossbody. Kenta hits a DDT on the floor and some kicks. Back in the ring, he hits an elbow drops and a stomp, a neck breaker. He kitchen sinks Tanahashi as well. Then he gets into some body scissors and some huge kicks as well. He goes for the face wash attempt. It's blocked. And what does Hiroshi Tanahashi do? Usually, once he grabs your leg, you know the drill here. Dragon screw leg whip. Somersault senton by Tanahashi. A sling blade is interrupted by a kick and a power slam by Kenta. And there's a strike exchange that happens. And Renshu's Umino, the referee, accidentally gets slapped by Kenta. Kenta DDTs Tanahashi while Renshu's is unconscious. Or was he slapped by Tanahashi or Kenta? Look, he was slapped and he collapsed. He just died. So what Kenta does here, like I said, he hits a DDT, goes outside, and he grabs the crutch that he was using all this time when he was injured because of the match, because of Tanahashi. And boy, oh boy, does he unload. Does he just fucking crack the crutch across Tanahashi's back over and over. And it bends. And it bends nice and proper. Like, Tana's getting a receipt here. And I'm okay with that. This worked. It worked in the context. And you could tell Kenta was letting out some frustration. All storyline. Like, I'm talking in kayfabe here. It worked so well. And you're like, oh, son of a bitch. It's hard to be mad at him. He sets up a table on the floor and he teases superplexing Tanahashi off of it. But he doesn't. He hits a dream killer instead. Corner hesitation dropkick as well. The coup de grace. Tanahashi kicks out of the pin attempt. Kenta drapes Tana over the ropes after that. And instead of driving him to the table, what he does, he goes to the outside and Kenta just grabs the table and chucks it at Tanahashi's head. It's just the whole table. The go to sleep is reversed into a twist and shout. Tanahashi lands a couple of sling blades. Aces high connects. High fly flow attempt. Knees are up by Kenta. And this is a story of this entire tournament. How I don't think, I'd have to double check. But I'm pretty sure. Tanahashi hasn't won a match using the high fly flow, right? I don't think he has. I don't think he's won a single match this tournament with the high fly flow. If he has, it was only one. And because every other time it's been a disaster for him. Busaiku knee by Kenta, open hand palms, knee strike, go to sleep. Kenta spoils the tournament in block C for Hiroshi Tanahashi, who is no longer relevant in the conversation. He is effectively eliminated from C block victory contention. I enjoyed this match quite a bit, and I think y'all should go watch it. Good, brutal, from two of the best to ever do it. You know, we sit around talking about how, you know, great Hiroshi Tanahashi is, and I put him over big time, especially in that match with Evil, right? And I still maintain that that specific match that he had with Evil during the tournament would not have worked with such success with anyone else than Hiroshi Tanahashi, right? He's one of the greatest. But Kenta is too. Don't underestimate how important Kenta was to the Japanese wrestling and wrestling in general at this point. From the mid-aughts onward. That's why it was such a big, big deal when he went to WWE. Like, I don't think, for multiple reasons. Of course, I was going to say, I don't think WWE fans really realized how significant a get this was. How significant an event it was. Even though the Kenta of the 2000s was gone in the sense that his injuries were keeping him from wrestling the way that he used to. And I mean, that's the kind of shit that happens when you put your body, when your body goes too hard, too strong for too long, that's what happens, right? But yeah, no, look, it's a silly point to make. Of course, WWE fans did not realize who they had in their midst. You know, another modern day legend of pro wrestling, Hideo Itami. So that was night 14. There's really one match to recommend, but I mean, if you want to sit down and watch the evening, it'll be entertaining. And it's four matches as opposed to the previous five matches that we've been having since a few weeks ago. These were only four matches as opposed to the five, so it's an easy watch regardless. And I really, really like the main event. It's not a match of the year or anything, but it's wholly entertaining. And now, night 18, August 16, on the day that I'm recording this, we were at the Budokan to start up the G1, the final night of the G1. We've got a bunch of matches here, two matches per block. And a lot of us were like, well, it'll depend. A lot of the decisions, a lot of the outcomes of the blocks are going to depend on what match is positioned where, right? And this show started off with Will Ospreay against Juice Robinson. So my gut feeling, or actually logic would say, oh, okay. Well, if they're starting with this D block match, then logically speaking, most likely, Will is going to lose and Shingo's going to win the next one. That was the situation that probably connected the most, right? But in the case of D block here on this day, everyone was hoping for the 7-way tie. When I say everyone, a lot of people. And honest to God, I feel very bad. Very, very bad. For everyone out there, you know, computing these numbers and putting this scenario together where you'd get a 7-way tie and people getting really, really excited about it. Because look, just to, you know, recap quickly, everyone at this point was tied at 6 points outside of Juice Robinson, El Fantasmo, and that's it, right? Those were the only two. So if Juice defeated Will and El Fantasmo defeated Shingo, we'd have the 7-way tie. And everyone at 6 points. And as much as the lover of chaos in me would have enjoyed to see what they could have done with a 7-way tie, like what would have been the out here? What would have been the situation? Like, a single pinfall kind of gauntlet match. I don't know what you do. Like, honestly, I don't know what you do to make it fair, to make it interesting, specifically, even more than fair, make it interesting, fun for the viewing audience, right? I don't know what they would have done, but there was no way. Look, it's not that there was no way. Ghetto is a booker who books sensibly. That's what I wanted to say from the get-go. He's a sensible booker. He doesn't go around coming up with these scenarios and then he's like on the final night of his tour of block action be like, well, we're going to come up with this really convoluted way to end the show. You don't like even how do you transmit that to the audience? Because there's still a live audience that you have to pump up and get excited. A live audience will not go, oh, will not pop for a seven-way tie. They're going to go, oh, well, how is that going to work? Because you know what? Most fans aren't sitting around on the internet being nerds like a lot of us. You know, you still have to deliver something for the audience that they're going to be able to pop for, just plain and simple. So, I saw the writing on the wall and I was like, look, this is not my first rodeo either with these, you know, weird ass combinations. Oh, this could happen. And they're fun to think of. Don't get me wrong. But ultimately, Gato's theme for his G1 booking is keep it simple, stupid. It's the KISS philosophy where he's gonna throw some bones. He's going to create some contenders. He's going to create these possible scenarios. But at the end, he's going to use the Occam's razor version of booking, where it's just like, I'm just going to go with the simplest version. I'm going to have this guy win and this guy's going to lose. So this guy's going to win the block. That's all. And you know what? Occam's razor is sometimes, most of the time, the best way to go about things. Isn't that, that's the whole principle of Occam's razor. But, you know, this match here, in and about itself, here we go. We're going into the D block stuff, and Juice Robinson comes out and he doesn't have the US title, which he stole again from Will during an undercard match on the tour. So he's coming to the ring, but Ospreay ambushes him during his entrance. But that turns against him. Juice Robinson kills him on the railings. Like, he's just like tossing him everywhere. He peels off the pad, off the floor. He can't pull off a move. But finally, they reach the ring. The match officially starts. Ospreay does a handspring topikon hilo as things spill out to the floor again. Robinson massacres him some more. He does a standing neck breaker over the rail on Ospreay. And that just, The turnbuckles get exposed. Robinson whips him into it. Phenomenal forearm by Will Ospreay and a pescado. A lariat by Juice Robinson. They fight on the apron, trying to land moves on each other. Ospreay does this crazy sunset powerbomb from the other side of the apron. They're both on the apron. They're fighting on the apron. And Juice sort of goes around the corner to avoid him. And Ospreay, from one end to the apron, jumps over the corner turnbuckle, lands on him to do a fucking sunset powerbomb off the apron. Robinson hangs on. Of course it's not going to happen. That'll kill a man. Or at least, like, severely injure a man. So we settle for a plain old powerbomb on the apron instead, which was still something, but Jesus, what a great move. Well, Ospreay goes for the 450, knees up by Juice Robinson, who connects with the juice box. There's a ref bump and a low blow by Robinson, who then goes under the ring to reveal that he's brought the IWGP US title with him. Hook kick by Will Ospreay, who avoids a first belt shot, but he gets planted by a second one. Robinson pile drives Ospreay on the exposed floor, back in the ring, hits pulp friction. Ospreay kicks out. There's a left hand of God by Robinson, a hook kick by Ospreay. Ospreay goes for the odd cutter, he gets caught. Rock slide by Juice Robinson. No, Ospreay lands on his feet, hits the hidden blade. And with this win, Will Ospreay kills the tournament for five other guys. He got everyone except for Shingo Takagi was out of this. We're out officially, absolutely, positively, because all Shingo had to do was tie at 8 with Will Ospreay. And since Shingo had the tiebreaker win over Ospreay, he would be the guy who went forward. So as we move into this next match here, this next D block match between Shingo and El Fantasmo, As we mentioned, No Phantasmo eliminated from the tournament, but could play spoiler for Shingo, and that's exactly what he did. Shingo early on knocks ELP down, drop kicks by ELP as he fires back, and a dive to the floor. He goes for the acai moonsault. He overshoots it a little, but he's okay because Shingo catches him as best he can. ELP hits a swanton and a lion salt. Takagi knocks ELP down. There's some strikes and a senton and a suplex by our boy Shingo. ELP fights back with a buzzsaw kick and the UFO. Shingo fights back and ends up on the floor again. ELP goes for a dive, but he dives right into a straight right punch by Shingo. Shingo hits the DVD on the floor. Some strikes follow. A DDT by Shingo back in the ring. Top rope Rana by ELP, followed by the Thunder Kiss 86. Shingo hits the Noshigami and a pumping bomber that decapitates our boy ELP. Pop-up DVD by Shingo follows. ELP then goes for the CR2. It connects, covers. Shingo kicks out. Kicks and strikes by El Phantasmo follows, who lands a cross arm pile driver, kind of like a CR2, but not exactly a CR2. And Shingo is out. He cannot beat the three count. He's toast. He's toast in this match, and he's toast in the tournament. El Phantasmo finishes with 6. So does Shingo Takagi. His tournament is done. Fantastic match. This was a lot of good. It was fun as hell. I may be biased because Shingo is probably one of my... Shingo is a top 3 wrestler for me in the world. Has been for the past 2 years, 3 years. And ELP, man. He's just fantastic. I've been an ELP guy for a long time. And more people are just going to discover how great this guy is, how much of an athlete he is, how much flair he has. This was a really good match and a great showing for ELP's first G1 here as well, where he got the 6 points, but he also was able to. He also was in a very prominent position here where he was able to play a spoiler here to one of the top guys in the company, right? Former IWGP World Champion, World Heavyweight Champion, excuse me, Shingo Takagi, right? So, no, he had a good tournament, I find. Was even able to take out Dave Finley, who was also someone who became a phenomenon in the tournament, let's put it that way. Then we had Evil versus Hirooki Goto. Actually, Evil defeated Hirooki Goto for the C block here. This match only mattered to Goto, who needed the win to stay alive. Unfortunately, he couldn't. Early shenanigans happen as the turnbuckle pad is removed. Both Evil and Goto fight on the floor. There's a snap suplex by Evil. They try to redo the Kenta elimination spot with Dick Togo under the ring holding on to Hirooki Goto's leg. But Goto fights off Togo, and he's able to get into the ring right into a Darkness Falls, though, by Evil. He being Hirooki Goto, hits the Shoto. Yuri Shigeroshi goes for the GTR. It's avoided. There's a ref bump. So Dick Togo comes in to do the Magic Killer with Evil, but it's reversed by Goto, who hits a combination head scissors neck breaker on both dudes. That was pretty fun. GTW by Goto hits. Togo interferes again. And we get the Everything is Evil for the win. Goto is officially done. Evil was already done. But this seals the deal for Hirooki Goto. He's not going to be in the conversation moving forward. I'm telling you guys. At some point, Gato, just the simplest way to approach this. You don't overthink stuff sometimes. Because Gato doesn't. Gato's like, nah, I just want this guy to win. We're going to take the quickest route. And then we get into the final C block match, where Tetsuya Naito defeated Zack Sabre Jr. Zack Sabre Jr. led the block for the majority of the tournament.
And this was the big one. And it was over in a flash. Again, like, this is also kind of part and parcel with the with this tournament here as well, giving us some these surprise flash endings, which we hadn't been really accustomed to. I guess this is a result of the four blocks and having more people involved. Sometimes you can have a little more, you have a little more leeway as a booker to go, well, okay, you're losing in under 40 seconds. And in this case, Zack Sabre Jr. lost under 2 minutes. They're rolling each other right and left. And at some point, Naito just fakes a Destino attempt and wraps Zack Sabre Jr. up into a cradle for the win. So, as I had predicted, but I'm not special. I think everyone saw this coming, right? This is not huge news. Tetsuya Naito wins the block after losing his first two matches and being in a position of danger for the entire tournament. Ran the gamut and made it to the top. He ties Zack Sabre Jr. at 8 points, but holds the tiebreaker. But the story here is the tantrum that Zack Sabre Jr. throws for losing the way he did. And it is a spectacular one. It had been a while since we had got a proper Zack Sabre Jr. Hissy fit. And we got it. And it was wonderful. Just spectacular stuff. Chairs and just being pissed off and, you know, just being angry, and then at some point he just collapses as the reality sinks in. It's like, oh my God, I just lost. You know, like, he was raging throughout, and then at some point he just falls on himself. I'm like, no! And it continued backstage too, because of course it did. And Naito's egging him on in the meantime. Like, Naito's not just standing in a corner and going like, what the hell is he doing, you know, kind of thing. No, and Naito's like, yeah, all right, here you go. He throws ice packs at him. Oh, Sabre is pissed. What a glorious moment. Like I said, it had been a while, but it was a lot of fun. So yeah, I mean, there's not much to, it's not even a match really. It was more like an event, which I'm not going to lie, I'm a little disappointed. I was really looking forward to Naito and Sabre here. And you know what? Here's the thing. Cause we've got two matches on this card here that had no incidents on the blocks, right? That had no implications in the block, really. Did I say two? Well, look, you could, one absolutely. And one that you could argue, you know, Evil and Hirooki Goto. Like, I don't think anyone really thought Goto was going to be part of this 8-point conversation, right? But then you had the Ishii Sanada match where both guys were eliminated. Both guys at this point were eliminated. So, you know, I get it. Like, the booking the was all set out in advance here. But honest to God, we got a 12-minute Ishii Sanada match, which was perfectly fine. You know, a fun match between them both. Don't get me wrong. But I'm like, yeah, you know what? I really would have liked Naito and Sabre going at it. That would have been nice. But then again, I can also appreciate that, you know, Tetsuya Naito is not the Naito we used to know. He's got nagging injuries. He's got things that he has to carry. Maybe he's like, you know what? Let's take it easy tonight so I can be in tip-top shape for my big match the next day. You know, there's no breaks from this point on, right? So I can get behind that. Or he doesn't want to risk an injury. He doesn't want to risk, you know, fucking up his eye again or hurting his leg or his knee. I can absolutely understand that. But still, I felt a little cheated. Just a tiny wee bit. And this Ishii Sanada match, like I said, was fine. It's fine. Fun little match. But there was, like, there's no significance to the blocks here. Lots of heavy action. We almost had a flash pin again, like early on in the match. And I was like, oh, okay, we're going to sit through this one. All right, fine. Leapfrogs, drop kick by Sonata. Hanging, spinning, the hanging neck breaker by Sonata off the apron. We got a spinning drop kick by Sonata as well. Springboard drop kick by Sonata and a strike exchange, a German by Ishii. Sonata rolls through a snapped mare attempt into an arm drag that ends with another hanging neck breaker. And I'm not sure if that was a goof and he just... Because if he did, if Sonata was going for a snap mare and botched it, you know, slipped, his recovery into the arm bar was pretty cool. Lots of reversals and strikes, a DDT by Ishii, a close fall on an O'Connor roll by Sonata, dragon suplex by Tomohiro Ishii, double underhook suplex by Sonata, but Ishii hits the lariat and the brainbuster for the win, so he does not finish with a measly 2 points. He finishes with four. Sonata's finishing with 6 points. But now we get to the big one for B Block, where Tama Tonga defeated Jay White. Who called it? This guy. And this was a very solid story that they had to say, regardless of the points score. This was Tama Tonga's revenge on Jay White for kicking him out of Bullet Club, for being an asshat to him. And Tama Tonga is raring to go. Like, he's really, really raring to go. And everyone's like holding him back. Like, no, take it easy, take it easy. Good guy Tama Tonga now. He's like, you know, he's still got that, but he's hantai now. He can't just like attack his, you know, whoever he wants, whenever he wants anymore. Some old habits are hard to break, but he's like, but this is Jay White. Can I just like, no, you can't. In control early here was Jay White, who has Tama Tonga eat a flapjack on the apron. And I'm not talking the breakfast meal. Jay White suplexes Tama Tonga right into the turnbuckle, a Saito suplex. He starts chopping Tama Tonga. Tonga asks for more. He's like, come on, come on. So Jay White delivers, aches, rakes the eyes on top of that, and chops him all the way down. Tama Tonga mounts his comeback with a scoop slam, a stinger splash, a back suplex. Jay White interrupts all of that with a DDT and a blade buster. German suplex by Jay White and a Valeno by Tama Tonga. And Enziguri, a DVD. The Supreme Flow lands. But Jay White hits a Uranagi and a sleeper suplex. And here's something that we have to point out here, is that as I'm, you know, talking about the moves and what they're hitting, Tama Tonga, the entire time that Jay White is trying to land these moves on him, right? He's resisting. Like, he's putting up a fight. If he's going for a suplex, he's going to try to elbow his way out of it. Like, there's nothing. Most of these moves, Jay White is not connecting with complete ease and total control. Tama Tonga was animated and alive throughout this entire match, which added to the feel of it. Tonga eventually, of course, fights back. He hits a Tongan twist and a bloody Sunday, calling back to a former Bullet Club leader. Gun stun is avoided by Jay White, who hits a sleeper suplex again. He goes for the Blade Runner. It's avoided. We have Tama Tonga going for a gun stun. It's avoided. Jay White pushes out of it, but Tama Tonga back in with a gun stun for the win. And a cheer from the audience, if I'm not mistaken. He is moving on to the semifinals. Tama Tonga winning B Block. It's a big deal. And I like this. I like how this punctuates the story, right? This is a guy who in Bullet Club, he's been a background player. But I don't care how much you want to talk about the Gorillas of Destiny and how good of a tag team they are, because we can absolutely talk about that. But ultimately, Tama Tonga throughout all these years has been, especially in recent years, when the Elite started taking over, and he's been a background player for a long time in Bullet Club. A tag team specialist, right? And now, breaks out of Bullet Club, bets on himself, if you want, if you may, and goes full force here. Defeats the world champion, defeats the leader of Bullet Club. He gets his full circle moment where he's like, fuck you, Jay White, and fuck you, Bullet Club. I made the right decision here. I think it's a good crossing the T, dotting the I moment here for that particular, for this particular bum in this story between Tama Tonga and Bullet Club. Now, this, of course, sets up the idea that Tama Tonga has a chance, has a title shot against Jay White down the road, which I honestly think they are going to pull the trigger on between now and, well, between, you know, the after the tournament leading into Wrestle Kingdom. They still have tours. They still have shows to do. I think this is going to be a main event at some point. They're going to do this. Jay White is going to defend. He's going to retain. But he is going to defend the title. So they've already set up a match. They've already set up a proper championship match. One that has passion, that has real, that has a good story behind it on top of the on top of the challenge. This is good stuff. Well done. You know, New Japan doesn't do stories though. So that's set for B block. Of course, Tama Tonga ties Jay White at 10 points, but Tama Tonga's got the tiebreaker. So, and Jay White's only loss. Jay White's only loss in the tournament. And Jay White threw a fit too after. Backstage mostly. Now we move on to the last two Block A matches. Jonah defeated Bad Luck Fale. Look, I am going to leave you guys alone with this match. There's no incidents in the outcome. If Jonah goes up to 8 points with a victory here, and Okada was already at 8, so I guess the idea here is that if Lance Archer defeats Kazuchika Okada, then Okada's out of the conversation, because then Jonah and Lance Archer will both have wins over Kazuchika Okada, and they'll all be tied at 8, so it'll be between Jonah and Lance Archer, which would ultimately mean Jonah was going to go over, right? So, because he, right, didn't he hold the win over Lance Archer? Let me just double check. No, Archer. Archer would have won. Archer would have won if he defeated Kazuchika Okada. Lance Archer would have won the block. That's awesome. So, like, no. So, ultimately, the Jonah match here had no incidents. And on top of that, it's against, it's against Bad Luck Fale. And I have no use for Bad Luck Fale. And this match had no use for me. Jonah slams Bad Luck Fale, I guess. That's a something. But look, I'm going to say this, you know, probably talk about it a little more on the show tomorrow. But, you know, thank God Jonah had this, like, the second part of his tournament to sort of let him shine a little bit. Like, I feel he hit a stride once he had his win against Kazuchika Okada. Then I feel like his matches picked up, his presence picked up, everything sort of felt, I think he felt more comfortable. You know, starting him off against Yano on night one and losing, this is awful. And you know, and I think he's, you know, I think he had his moments to shine with his match with Jeff Cobb. I thought was really good as well. His match with I thought his match with Lance Archer was very good. Of course, his match with Okada. But you know, what does Jonah in this situation have to offer more than what Jeff Cobb is already offering the company, and he's on the payroll I know Jeff. I know Jonah's on is in the company as well. He's working mostly on Strong. I get all of that. But, you know, I find it strange that Jeff Cobb finishes the tournament, you know, with 6 points. He's at, you know, a 500 record. Whereas Jonah is positioned a little superior to him in this context. And whereas I think Jeff Cobb has a lot more overall value. I think he's more athletic. I think he's more charismatic. No knocks against Jonah, who I think had the chance to shine in this tournament. I'm glad he did. But it's interesting to me, like, what does he bring that we don't already have with Jeff Cobb? Tell you one thing, Jonah brings a lot more to the table than Bad Luck Fale. Jonah won with the torpedo. Good riddance to Bad Luck Fale. I honestly hope this is the last G1 we see him on the lineup. I really honestly do. I mean, at this point, fucking raid Gleet. You know, bend down to whatever asinine requests Shima will ask of you. Get T-Hawk on this. Get Shima himself. I don't care at this point. Call up the people in NOAA and say, look, send us anyone. Send us Kitamiya. Send us Go Shiozaki. Send Keno. Send anyone. We don't care. Fucking pull someone out of fucking Chocopro. Put Aki in there. Because honestly, anything, anyone will be better. Anyone will be better than Bad Luck Fale another year on the G1 Climax roster. We're good now. Anyway, Kazuchika Okada defeated Lance Archer, and as I thought it was going to be, I thought this match was very good. This one also, I got two recommended matches on this card here, by the way. I've got two of them. I thought the El Fantasmo Shingo match was very good. I think you should go check that out. And I thought the Okada Lance Archer match was very good as well. But a very, very good stuff. You know, if you want to skip, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's focus on the match here first, Warren. Thank you, Warren. Lance Archer playing the pro, calm, collected superstar. He wants to win. He's been on commentary over the past couple of nights of action, and he's been very focused on winning the block. He sold me on the fact that this was serious for him. And he comes to the ring and he's not fucking around. He's standing in the middle of the ring. And Okada's like, come on, brother, let's go. And he's just standing in the middle of the ring. Okada comes up to him and he choke slams him. Just great stuff. You know, spinning slide slam because of that. And a pounce that sends Kazuchika Okada out to the floor. And Lance just grabs his head and starts ramming the back of Okada's head against the guardrail over and over and over again. And then he does the running cannonball senton into the rail. And I'm like, this is fantastic. This is what you expect Lance Archer to do, right? He wants to fucking win. And on top of that, he's a brutal savage. This works. This is perfect. And then he beats up a young boy, a young lion, and he scoop slams him onto Okada. Just great stuff. Does the rope walk as they get back into the ring. Okada has to fight back with a... Look, commentary called it a short arm lariat. They danced around the fact that it really fucking looked like a rainmaker. But I think he really did pull like a spinning rainmaker or something to just give himself some distance because he was getting the shit beat out of him. So it gave him a moment to breathe. He didn't try to pin because he was almost knocked out himself. Get some drop kicks by Kazuchika Okada. Okada even manages to body slam Archer, which was cool. He hits the elbow drop. Lance Archer hits a drop kick himself, followed by a rainmaker. And the crowd gasps. The silent crowd that cannot make a sound. They see this shit happening. They're seeing Okada getting his ass handed to him. Great stuff. The blackout lands. Okada reverses it into a crucifix, but Archer kicks out just again. Crowd are excited. They're clapping. And you're like, fuck, this should be a loud crowd. They're into it. Okada goes for the money clip. Archer fights out of it. He bowls Okada over with a lariat. It's a drop kick. Okada, out of nowhere, hits the landslide, which kind of looked like a falcon arrow. But they called the landslide and hits the Rainmaker for the win. Hell of a, like, what was it like? See, it was a 12-minute match. Just almost 13 minutes. And it didn't have to be anything more. It didn't have to be a 25-minute epic. This was perfect. Archer, the monster, coming in, and he's been in these top-level positions before, comes in, runs Okada aground. Okada fights from underneath, pulls it off. Because it's Kazuchika Okada. So he wins the block. I thought this was an entertaining wrestling show, nonetheless. And, you know, I don't want to seem too down on the things that didn't matter on the card or the things that, you know, I really, outside of Jonah and Bad Luck Fale, which stunk, it just stunk. Everything else is enjoyable, watchable. You've got some story beats in here. There's a little something interesting in everything that happened, and it should be because it's the last night of the block. So it's not as if I'm like, wow, what great, fantastic booking. And they're like, no, I mean, this is, I expected this, and thank you, because it was fun. I enjoyed watching Night 18. Two great matches on it on top of that. And an entire, overall, well-worked, outside of one exception, well-worked, entertaining night of pro wrestling. If you want to wrap up your G1 experience, go right ahead and watch it. It's barely a three-hour show on top of that. All these matches, none of them overstayed their welcome. Like I said, you know, I would have liked a little more substance to the Zack Sabre Jr. Naito thing, but, you know, you want to be careful with Naito. And this is where we're going to start talking about the semifinals and where we're going with this. And remember what I just said. You got to be careful about Naito. Let's not forget this here. Because I think, yes, he was being saved. I think they gave him a flash match. I think they gave him a flash match because they gave him a flash match because they wanted to protect him, make sure that he was healthy, is what I'm trying to say, for tomorrow, for the 17th, for his match against Will Ospreay, because that Block C winner, Tetsuya Naito, will be facing Block D winner, Will Ospreay. And this is the first time they meet, and I had not realized that when commentary was calling this. You know what? When commentary called this, I was sitting there, and I had my notebook, and I had my pen in my hand, you know, and I was like this, and I'm writing down, and I think it's Chris Charlton, and goes, first time ever, Tetsuya Naito versus Will Ospreay. And I literally go, that's bullshit. And I can't grab my phone, and I go on Cage Match. But it's true. First time in a singles match, these two together. That's a hell of a selling point right there. That fucking rules. What are you talking about? I'm really excited for that. Like, I was excited. Basically, this is, yeah, as the tournament went on, this is what I saw developing, right? Naito and Ospreay. I had called Ospreay a while back. But this is a great main event for the show tomorrow. It'll probably be Okada and Tama Tonga. But if I'm booking this, that match goes last, Naito and Ospreay. This is going to rule. This has all the this has match of the year potential on it as well. So there's a lot of good here. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And you know who I think wins? And this is important for A-Block. This is why I'm going to... We're talking about A-Block and B-Block. This is for the other semifinal. We're talking about this semifinal first, C and D. Because I believe Tetsuya Naito is going to win this. And that directly influences what I think about A and B-Block. And here's my logic as to why Tetsuya Naito is going to win. They being commentary... have been mentioning over and over and over, just driving it home, drilling it home so much that this might be Naito's last chance at a Wrestle Kingdom main event. And I believe it. Guy's up there in age, his injuries. He's hugely popular still. And he'll always be in a top of the card position. But like main event at Wrestle Kingdom, I think we may be slowly, that ship may slowly be passing right now. I think we that might be an era that is behind us at this point. So I kind of get it. I kind of do buy into that. Because Naito's been injured every year for the past 3 years. Out significant amounts of time. For the past 3 years. If not four. I can distinctly remember three. So. I sincerely believe that this is what they want to do. I sincerely believe that one of the two nights of Wrestle Kingdom. Tetsuya Naito will be main eventing. One of the two. I sincerely believe that. As you can tell. I'm setting up a victory here. For him. For the G1. I think Tetsuya Naito will be winning the G1 Climax 32. Why not Kazuchika Okada? Why not Tama Tonga? I think the finals are going to be Tetsuya Naito and Tama Tonga. Because I really think the story you want to tell is Tetsuya Naito goes to Wrestle Kingdom maybe for the last time. I think that's the drama. I think that's the story you want to tell. Goes to Wrestle Kingdom main event. I want to make sure I'm being clear. And I think that's the underlying story you want to tell here. Now, to do that, he has to defeat Will Ospreay and go to the finals of the G1, right? Do we really... Look, I do not think for a single solitary second that Gedo would be... What's the word? Is it arrogance? Is it cluelessness? What would be... I don't think... There is anything he could possibly envision that would make sense to have Gedo give us Okada Naito for the fourth time this year. Because they've already had three singles matches together. Two title shots, if I'm not mistaken, and the match at the New Japan Cup. I don't think we go for a fourth here. Guys, gals, non-binary pals. I really don't. It doesn't. If it does, I'm going to be very disappointed. And I think it makes even more sense for Tama Tonga to win this. You know what's great about having Tama Tonga in this mix? It feels fucking fresh. It feels good. You're like, Okada and Tama Tonga. Okada, you know, best in the world, so on and so forth. Tama Tonga in the midst of a big babyface push. You know, this is where we're making him credible, setting him up for something big. Right? Have him beat Okada. Have him beat the Rainmaker. Have him beat Jay White one night. Have him beat Okada the next night. You're starting to establish yourself a new guy to peek through that world heavyweight championship ceiling right now. Which, you know, we're going to have to see how the crowds react when they can actually start cheering. But I have a feeling, my gut is telling me, this Tama Tonga babyface turn is working. Especially if he starts pushing merch on top of that. I think it might be working. So, if we circle back around here, I think it makes for a great story to have Tama Tonga defeat Okada in the semifinals of the G1 and head into the finals against Tetsuya Naito. And I think it ties into even with even more significance with what I was talking about earlier, discussing the Jay White Tama Tonga match. It's like, look, I completely shed my Bullet Club skin and look at where it brought me. Look at where I am right now. I'm in the fucking G1 finals. I beat Jay White. I beat Kazuchika Okada. I can beat Tetsuya Naito. You know, kind of thing. And don't forget, Gedo likes to set up his challengers like this. This makes perfect sense in Gedo booking here. Tama Tonga beats one top guy, beat the next night beats another top guy. He could absolutely beat another top guy the night after. This is the beats. These are story beats. And don't get me wrong, I think it'd be great for him to win the G1, but I don't think we're there yet. And I don't think, again, business-wise, you know, New Japan coming out of two dismal years, financially rough years as well on top of that. We're getting the Tokyo Dome back for another two nights, hopefully full capacity, people screaming, so on and so forth. You're going to put your top guys up there. No disrespect to Tama Tonga. And I'm sure he himself would be like, sure, I'm not there yet. But you want to bank on the people that will move tickets. Kazuchika Okada is a draw. Tetsuya Naito is a draw. There's no question about that. And you put them in the main event. And you're going to have a fantastic main event. And they go, Warren, what are you talking about? If Kazuchika Okada doesn't win the G1, gosh darn it, he's not going to make it, right? Well, remember, there's two nights to Wrestle Kingdom now. So whoever gets the briefcase, the contract, they challenge for one night. And you still have a second night. So Okada can still insert himself into the main event. That's what happened with Jay White. And when, you know, Ibushi had the briefcase, right? That's what Jay White did. Went and stuck his nose in there. Was like, I don't have the briefcase, but I don't need a briefcase. I can just challenge whoever the fuck I want. And he's not wrong. You know what I mean? So even if... the point here is that Okada doesn't need to win the G1. I think you use the G1 to further Tama Tonga, to really establish him as a guy. And on top of that, it follows the pattern like I was talking about, I think, last episode that I did, where he's emulating Carl Anderson, his mentor, the guy who bequeathed the gun stun onto him, right? That he's Carl Anderson, G1 finalist, Tama Tonga, G1 finalist. There's that parallel that they're coming up here as well. So it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one because there's going to be, look, Okada and Tama Tonga, which is, you know, a bit of an unknown quantity at this. They have fought before, but not on this level. And you know, I'm going to be extremely transparent. As much as I've enjoyed Tama Tonga throughout the G1, and I thought he's done a fantastic job, solid work throughout, love his babyface work, we have yet to see the main event spark out of him. We have yet to see that great one out of him. And look, if there's a guy who can help you along, pull that out of you, make it happen, bring it into reality, it's Kazuchika Okada, one of the greatest to ever do the fucking thing, right? And on the other night, you have Tetsuya Naito and Will Ospreay, two of the greatest as well. Tetsuya Naito, a legend in and about himself, Will Ospreay, one of the greatest wrestlers currently in the world. What are you going to do? There is the semifinals are going to rule, and I am absolutely foreseeing Tetsuya Naito versus Tama Tonga which should be a blast. And it's a good experiment for Tama Tonga, a good test. What, you know, how will he handle the pressure? How is he going to make it, you know, how is he going to perform when the spotlight is solely on him on this huge platform? Because it could mean a lot for the rest of his career. I'm excited. I'm very excited for these. So that's in the can. G1. We're good. We're done. Hit the bricks. So, just as a quick reminder, I will be finishing up my G1 coverage not tomorrow, but on Thursday. During the live recording of the Mr. Warren Hayes show at 9 p.m. Eastern right here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, or otherwise you'll be able to listen to the podcast or the video on demand afterwards, the day after, where I will recap the entire G1. We'll recap the final matches, my overall thoughts, favorite matches, top moments, so on and so forth. We'll have ourselves a proper wrap up of this one's G1. I'm excited to share my final thoughts with you on that. But hey, I want to thank every one of you who's taken the time, even if this is the first one, or if you've done a couple in the past, of listening to these G1 recaps. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it a great deal. I feel like people enjoyed them. I feel like I got a little bit of very good feedback, and that's always good. So I'll probably be back next year to do that. Maybe next year I'll do, you know, one per night. It's always a question of, you know, time and availability, of course. But, you know, maybe I'll do, you know, instead of combining two into one, I'll just do one review per night. Maybe. Look, we'll put a pin in that, as they like to say. I don't know who they are, but they like to say a lot of things. And we'll figure that out for next year. But seriously, thank you all so very much for joining me, for listening, for being along for the ride for this G1 Climax 32 and all these recaps that I did. I really do appreciate it. And be sure to join me on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show for the complete wrap-up. Until then, see you next time.